Jan that I'd had a nice chat with Glenn after the discussion this morning, and she said that this afternoon she would really like the discussion to be about basics, back to basics, without using too many Pali terms or book details. And she said she would like us to start talking about these basics. So I'll just give a little summary of the chat I had with Glenn, and other people may like to join in then. I asked him at the beginning whether when he hears about visible object or just that which is seen now, whether it's of any particular interest or whether it seems of relevance to anything much in life. And at first he wasn't inclined to think so, and he mentioned that he needed to hear the basics. So I said we'd talk more about the basics. And right at this moment, actually, we think that we see people and things, but actually just that which is seen, just visible object is seen. But immediately afterwards, this thinking about table and people and chairs and trees. But this is thinking, it's not the moment of seeing just that which is seen, which is visible object. And the question is whether we would like to go through life as usual in ignorance about what the truth of life is, or whether we're interested to understand a little more about life. Because usually in life, what we find most important is our family, our work, our possessions. But at the end of life, we lose all those things anyway. So what is the purpose of just collecting more attachment to what we find important in life? So for some of us, what is most important of all is to understand a little bit more about the truth of life. And we talked about how when we're sleeping at night, when we're dreaming and we wake up, it's very clear that it's a dream world, it's a fantasy world, it's not real. It's clear when we wake up that what seems so real when we were asleep were just fantasies, illusions. But actually, what about now? What about the fantasies, the dreams that we're living in at this moment? And Glenn gave a good example that a teacher at school had mentioned about how when one's driving along the road and one thinks one can see a lake, and then one gets closer and it's a mirage. And actually right now we're living in the world of mirages and fantasies all the time. As soon as we think we see people and things and trees, it's a world of mirages, of fantasies, because actually only visible object is seen now. Only sound is heard. When we think we hear the sound of birds or rustling of plastic or the sound through the microphone, immediately it's an idea of things and people and plastic bags, but actually only sound is heard. So at this moment, there's just one world experienced at a time through eyes, ears, nose, tongue, or mind, and that's all. And it seems that it's I who am having these experiences, seeing or hearing. But who or what is this I that is seeing? Who or what is this I that's hearing? Actually, there is just a moment of seeing, followed by moments of thinking. Thinking there is an I that sees, that an I that experiences. And this is how we begin to learn that actually even what we take for I is a fantasy, a mirage, an idea, because there's just the moment of seeing, just that which is seen, and then thinking about it. And we learn that these different realities, each one arises because of different causes or conditions. And this is life, just different moments of experience arising because of different causes or conditions, which no one can control or make arise at will. And I mentioned that it's not about the terms or the details or the books, it's about what can be tested now. So at the moment of touching what we take to be a table. Glenn agreed, it's just hardness that appears now. Just touching, just hardness. And as soon as there's an idea of table, it's back to the world of thinking about ideas, not the reality that is experienced at this moment. Questions or questions about it, Glenn?
No, I think that's a fairly accurate description of our conversation, yeah. It's interesting to analyze things that way.
Does it make the talk about these different realities a little more interesting or relevant to life now?
Hard to say. I guess it does.
It's a different way of understanding what the present moment is. There's a distinction that is made between what is real and what is thought about. The sound heard through the ear door and the object seen through the eye door and the hearing and the seeing themselves are both real in a sense that we can mention in a minute. And the thinking about what is being seen or heard is also real. But the thoughts, the ideas that are conjured up, whether they're visual image or just ideas of sounds and words, those thoughts or images are not real. They're just mind-created. We say seeing is real because it's common to everyone who has eye sense, just like hearing is real. We don't have to explain or describe it. We understand that what is heard is sound. Likewise, what is tasted when, say, food is eaten is that particular object that's experienced. Also, when we have a pleasant feeling, we all know what pleasant feeling is. It doesn't depend on a description. Every being experiences pleasant and unpleasant feeling from time to time. These things we say are real. They have a particular characteristic, whereas the ideas and thoughts that come to mind do not.
Anything that doesn't seem clear or any questions about it, Lynn?
I wonder if this is similar to the there's a concept in neuroscience which holds that there is a gap between the stimulus and the response. When you have a stimulus coming in, light or sound, there's a gap between that and the response of your brain to it. And that it's therefore possible in that gap to control what the stimulus is producing.
What would control that stimulus? That's the question.
Well, it would be the brain of the individual.
And what is the brain of the individual?
That's another question.
I think what you've described is what we would call a story about the present moment experience rather than a direct experience of something at the present moment, right? So there's lots of ways of explaining the world. There's the scientific way, there's the atomic physics way, and so on and so forth. And there's lots of ways of explaining different events or phenomena that happen. But those things are not the present moment. What we are focusing on here is what is real at the present moment, because that is the only thing that can be directly understood by direct experience with understanding. If we appreciate that distinction, then we don't have to bother about the other explanations for the time being. There'll always be questions because we'll always have the tendency to compare our direct experience with something we've learnt or thought about before. But we understand that to be a line of thinking with a story, and that what is valuable to come to understand is what can be directly experienced at the present moment.
I think that we can think in many, many ways. Or shall we talk about thinking in different ways than before? instead of thinking about the story of the light and brain, I think that there is just one moment at a time. Is that right? Just one moment of seeing, which is different from moment of hearing. So there are one moment at a time. They cannot be together simultaneously at a time. Like they cannot be seeing and hearing together. So if one understands that what is there in a moment, because now it's the moment of seeing, and the other moment is moment of thinking, other moment is moment of hearing. So many moments in one's life that hasn't been known yet. So if we just really understand what is there from birth up to now and on, there must be that which can experience, like seeing sees that which is seen, and hearing hears only that which is heard only. And they cannot be seen without conditions at all. Not the brain that is thinking about brain, but brain doesn't have anything to do with seeing. If we try to think another aspect, like seeing what it is necessary for seeing to arise, there must be what we call I, right? Without I, seeing cannot arise. But what we take for I is not the whole I. It's not the black and blue or white, but it's that which can be a very special reality which the visible object can impinge on it right now. So there must be that which can impinge on that special rupa at the body, somewhere in the eye. But actually it's in the middle of the eye, as taught by the one who has enlightened. But anyway, there must be the eye base and the visible object. If there is only the eye without the visible object contacting, no seeing at all. And even there is the eye and the visible object, but they are apart, they are not there together, there are no conditions for seeing to arise. So only seeing now, we have no idea about thinking about I or me or brain or anything at all. Just that which sees. The factors of seeing must be the visible object and the eye base. And there is also other conditions which is unknown. Because sometimes seeing experiences the pleasant object, and sometimes seeing experiences the unpleasant object. Even the object which is seen is different, because something we like and something we don't like. Why do we like? Because it's pleasant. Why do we not like? Because it's not pleasant. So everything goes on its way beyond anyone's arrangement or control at all. Is that a moment of seeing? We learn to understand each moment of life from moment of birth on, without understanding how it comes and goes. But there must be condition for anything which arises. It cannot arise just out of blue or at anyone's will at all. Right here and now, without that which can be the base or where the sound hits or strikes or contact or impinge on it, and without that which can hear it, sound cannot appear at all. There are many sounds by conditions for their arising, but only that which is experienced is different, because it's only that which arises, that sound, heard, and then fall away instantly. And the other sound is not heard, only that which is experienced is heard. No one hears, only a reality, an element which can experience arising by conditions only. And it arises from moment of birth nonstop from time to time by conditions, even right now. So we can talk about different moments of citta, of that which experiences and that which is experienced. So many things happen, like, dislike, anger, kindness. By what? Out of the blue, impossible. There must be conditions for every conditioned arising. That's why we learn to understand life different from another aspect. Because usually we think about parents, friends, society, and the science about how there is brain and so on. But can you see brain? Sometimes there is seeing, and what is seen is we call brain. But actually, what is brain? Because without the visible object, which can be object of seeing, there's no idea about that shape and form as brain. Right? There must be seeing, and there's thinking about the shape and form. So there is the memory of that particular shape for this, particular shape for that. So we take the shape and form out of the visible object which is seen, even right now. Close one's eyes, no one at all. But whenever there is the visible object which is seen, it arises, falls away so very rapidly. So that what is left is the image of that, like things and people. And this is life, experienced from time to time. Without that which can experience, there's no life at all. So actually, what are there in this room? See, visible object is seen, sound is heard, tangible object is touched, and conditioned thinking a lot about shape and form of whatever. Sound is not only one same sound all the time, different sounds. When one says that it's different, it means that one moment of experiencing this sound, the other moment the other sound. So there can be the difference between the two. Is that right? It sounds, but visible is now. Does visible sound right? Or it is right because it is that which is seen. So when there is the understanding of the absolute truth, it doesn't sound or seem. It's real. No one can change its characteristic at all. One cannot change seeing to be hearing, thinking. Just arises to see, that's all. No more. Falls away instantly. And thinking does not see, but it think about that which is seen, which has fallen away. That's why we have memory and idea about many things all the time. It seems like permanent, it seems like, but in reality, nothing can be permanent. Nothing can stay for long. Only very, very short as now. A moment of seeing is not a moment of hearing, but they seem arise together. And there are many moments in between too, unknown. But the enlightenment can talk about just very tiny, tiniest moment from moment to moment. Because now it appears like there is seeing and hearing only two, and thinking in between. Actually, more than that. That can be known little by little to see what is heard it true or not. If it's not now, forget it. It's not important because it's not now. But what we're talking is now. It's so real. We don't have to go out and find somewhere to experience. But it's now. So the truth is this moment. Can we find the truth somewhere else? Why is here? the truth of seeing, the truth of hearing, the truth of thinking, the truth of like, dislike, whatever, arising by conditions only. Everyone would like to be happy, but it's impossible to have it at will. But when time comes, by conditions, it's there, but very temporarily. Did you enjoy your breakfast this morning?
Yes, as far as I can recall.
What were there that you liked, that you enjoyed? Could you remember?
I can remember.
Please, what are there? How many things that you like this morning?
What did I have?
Yes.
An egg and some toast.
Okay. Only that? Only that?
Oh, I had some jam.
Only that? Much more than that, because not only taste, there is seeing too. You like or you didn't like the look of the food, see?
Right.
So many things were experienced and forgotten. So life is like this, just experience in a moment, very short, and then forgot.
But many things you also remember.
Yes, but it's not exactly that one which is experienced. It's only in memory. So memory is a reality. Why people remember more than the others? By conditions. Everything is conditioned to arise. But it does not belong to anyone because it's completely, absolutely gone. Never to arise again. And this is life from moment to moment. Keep on creeping away, arising and falling away, unknowingly all the time. Even just a moment ago, it's not this real moment. And we take everything for real, for permanent, for I, for mind. Actually, even the body does not belong to anyone at all. It's conditioned that we have different body, see, by conditions, yeah. And this is what we are interested to learn more, to have less selfishness, clinging to the self, the ego, the I, because it harms all unwholesome realities, harm oneself and then harms the other. Otherwise there must be I all the time, and whenever there's I, we crave for I. Everything, the food must be good, everything must be as we like, try. That's why from moment to moment one seeks for the pleasure from that which is experienced, from bread, from coffee, from melon, from clothes, from cars, from every doorways. Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. Do you think that attachment is wholesome?
Well, even if the attachment is harmful,
right,
it's still human.
Certainly, that is the right answer, see. It's there, it's natural, it's conditioned. No one can do anything because it's conditioned to arise and falls away, like all conditioned reality. But each reality has its own characteristic and its own function. For example, attachment is different from aversion, see? Aversion is real, attachment is real. They are unwholesome, they harm. But no one knows because they harm in different ways.
And earlier we were talking about how all through life there's just one moment of experiencing followed by another, like an electric current or something. And Ajahn was also mentioning moments of seeing, moments of thinking, moments of hearing, one moment of experiencing at a time. And we can refer to how it's one moment of experiencing at a time. But she also used a word, one Pali word, she used the word citta. So citta just means a moment of experiencing. So it's like a shorthand for when we're talking about seeing or hearing or thinking. Each one is citta. So we learn one or two Pali words just so that we can communicate more easily. So this is citta. At each moment of life, there is a citta which experiences an object, followed by another citta which experiences another object, on and on and on. And we talk about these different cheetahs, such as seeing or hearing or thinking, to understand there isn't any self or brain that does the experiencing, just moments of seeing, hearing, thinking. And each of these cheetahs or moments of experienced are accompanied by mental factors. So we talked about how there is memory at each moment, and Kunsuchin also mentioned the same. So memory arises with every citta throughout life, marking and remembering what's experienced, so that we can remember afterwards the names of each other and remember this is a table or a microphone. But actually it's just citta arising at each moment with memory and other mental factors. Another mental factor that arises at each moment is feeling. So at each moment, pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, or neutral feeling. So usually when there's a moment of experiencing with pleasant feeling, then usually it's a kind of attachment. But actually, like now, there could be some wise considering with pleasant feeling too. But we learn a little bit more about how each citta arising through life experiences its object, accompanied by different kinds of mental factors to experience that object.
And a minute ago you said about attachment, that it's human, and that's exactly right. It's natural, normal for everyone. And so the purpose of our discussions, of our interest, is not to change the way things are, but to understand the way things are and why they are that way. So anything that is real, like attachment, aversion, liking or disliking, pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, seeing or visible object, can be directly known for what it is, because at the moment there is just a general idea about these things, and there's no understanding of how they relate to each other, whether they all happen at the same time, because it seems, for example, that we see and hear and think and feel simultaneously and continuously. But in fact, according to the reality of things as explained by the Buddha, it's not quite like that. These different kinds of moments of consciousness arise one after the other, individually, separately, but so rapidly that there's the appearance of continuity and simultaneity. And so this is just coming to understand the way things are better than they're understood at the moment, and they are taken for having a degree of permanence that is not in line with the way they really are, being momentary and arising and falling away, and condition happening by conditions that are not apparent to us.
And what is meant by human?
I don't know. I guess it's this part of the human condition.
Yes, but what is human? Is it different from other beings? What are humans and what are not human?
I don't know. Humans are just human beings.
Okay, you mean us here?
Yeah.
What about the bird? The bird.
The birds. They're not human, no.
Not human being. Does a bird see?
Yes.
Do we see?
Yes, we do.
So seeing is seeing. Only seeing, no shape, no form of bird and be human. seeing experiences with world object, no matter what we call bird, snake, cat, dog, human being. So in the absolute sense, just we talk about a moment of seeing with our ship, no one there, no bird, no human being, only seeing arises and sees.
Well, but humans have a sophisticated brain that organizes and retains the stimulus of light.
And does the bird also have brain?
Yeah, but very, very simple one.
Yeah, different kinds.
Different kind of brain.
Bird has memory.
Bird?
Yeah.
The memory?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure.
Bird eggs. Not sure.
Some of the
parents recognize offspring.
Some might have memory in a very limited sense.
Remember where food is found. Remember where their nest is when they fly away.
Yeah, there's a line between memory and instinct, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. And even the baby.
Yes, I mentioned that.
But some birds don't recognize their own offspring.
Mm-hmm.
And they will raise the offspring of other birds.
But those other offspring they would then recognize, the ones they're raising.
I don't know.
Memory, again. So what Ajahn is leading up to is that, can we say that attachment is not just human, but it's universal to all beings? Liking, disliking, seeing, thinking about what has been seen and heard, remembering, pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling.
Is the bird born and die too?
Yes.
Exactly the same. Not permanent.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
But if where you're going is that there are
differences between birds and human beings, that too is true. Humans, if there are conditions, are able to develop understanding of realities around them, the constant arising and falling away of realities, where birds, cats, dogs can't. So there are differences, but in terms of the experiencing of objects that contact the senses, the eye sense, the ear sense, tongue, body, nose, birds and cats and dogs, that happens with them as well, but they don't have that capacity, if the conditions are right, to understand realities, to understand what we're talking about.
So does seeing belong to us? Now, there is seeing, does it belong to me or you or us?
It's part of our characteristics.
If it's gone completely, absolutely, no more, so it doesn't belong to anyone at all.
Well, I'm not quite sure what you mean by belongs to.
Yes. When there is seeing, there is the idea of I see or my seeing, right? But actually, seeing just arises by condition to see, and it falls away instantly. So can it belong to anyone when it's gone completely, no more? Seeing yesterday is gone. Seeing just a moment is gone. No one there to hold it, to have it, to take it for I.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, nothing really belongs to anybody.
Right. In the absolute sense.
And when you say it's part of our
characteristics, what is us or our to that has any characteristics? What does it mean to say it's part of our characteristics?
This is a very big question. Philosophers have been analyzing this for centuries.
That's the point, because we assume
that we see, or seeing is part of us, but what is us to have any seeing or to have any hearing? Because now at a moment of seeing, it's just the arising of that citta, that moment of experiencing, which experiences visible object and falls away. We think that it's I who see, or our characteristic, but actually, if there's no thinking about us or our characteristics, where are they? So actually, us or our, or those characteristics, it's just in our imagination again, another mirage, another fantasy, because actually, at this moment, it's just seeing which sees visible object, and afterwards thinking about the table, thinking about us, thinking about our characteristics. Because our characteristics cannot be touched, it cannot be seen, it cannot be heard, it can only be thought about.
If nothing arises at all, can there be I? Nothing arises. No seeing, no hearing, no thinking. Can there be the I? Nothing.
No, I think probably not.
If seeing doesn't belong to us and hearing doesn't belong to us, can we call them elements? Elements of consciousness?
They're certainly part of the tools.
Yeah. And they each have a characteristic different from the other.
Yes.
Right. So there are these different elements that we take for the different individuals, ourself and the other person and the outside world.
Yes.
I think that's what Sarah was getting at.
Uh-huh.
And this is what we mean by seeing things as they are, having a better understanding of the way things are, so that we don't mistake something that is an element for something that belongs to a person, for example, or is a person, or is made by a person. As Ajahn said a moment ago, moments of seeing arise and fall away, gone forever. Of course, there's the memory of what has been seen, and that too arises and falls away with each moment of consciousness. There's a lot of information here, but it can be considered and reflected upon to see if it's in accordance with life as we know it. So we're not trying to see things in a different way, but just talking about how things might be in a way that can be verified. When I say verified, it can be confirmed by direct experience whether it's true or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, isn't that the difference between the mirage and the reality? I mean, not everything is in our imagination.
I mean, the imagination
is a small part of our brain, but the way we think about things and organize our perceptions is a skill that's been developed over millions of years based on testing with reality. That's what makes a difference between seeing the puddle in the road and there actually being a puddle in the road.
Well, the question is, has it been tested against reality, or do we make assumptions about the way things are that have not actually been tested against reality? In other words, do we hold views based on innate beliefs that are held that may not be fully in accordance with the way things are?
Oh yeah, sure, sometimes, lots
right.
of people do.
Yeah. So,
probably even me.
Well, I think everyone does, because most people have not really considered whether seeing is a momentary consciousness element that arises and falls away, or whether it's a continuous and controlled part of an individual that is subject to that individual's control.
So in brief, as we discussed earlier and as we're talking about now, there are two kinds of realities, those realities which can experience an object, such as seeing, hearing, thinking, and those realities which cannot experience anything at all, such as visible object, sound, hardness. Those are different kinds of realities, whether or not we've ever heard anything about them or not. And so there can be thinking wisely about what is real, or there can be thinking about ideas such as tables and chairs, which is unusually taking them for being reality, and that's when one's living in the world of illusions, when one takes the tables and chairs for being real. So the realities themselves, just two kinds, those that can experience an object and those that can't. So we learn about more and more different kinds of realities so that we know more and more confidently what actually is true and real now. So we heard that there are cheetahs, moments of experience all through life, such as seeing and hearing, and mental factors such as memory and feeling and concentration, different mental factors that arise with those cheetahs that experience an object. And the realities that cannot experience anything we call rupa. So hardness is a rupa, sound is a rupa, visible object is a rupa. These are realities which don't experience anything. So by learning more about realities, we learn more about what is the true world at this moment and what is the mirage world. So it doesn't mean we stop thinking or stop having ideas, but we learn to differentiate between what is an idea and what is a reality. Does that make a little sense?
It starts to make sense to me. Certainly the idea of consciousness existing in a series of experiences that rise and fall away, I think that's probably consistent with modern theories of astrophysics, which conjoin space and time so that nothing is really ever permanent. The universe is always changing and expanding, and that you're never in the same place twice.
The reality described one way can be verified, described the other way cannot be directly verified by us. So the astrophysics way of describing the world, it's a theory, but whether or not we're ever in the same place twice can never actually be verified by direct experience, whereas the momentary nature of consciousness presumably could, if one came to understand it, because it's appearing, it's capable of being directly experienced. So that's the distinction we're making. So a minute ago Sarah mentioned about the table not being real. One may wonder, why isn't it real? Because it's there, and if I walk over and bump into it, I'll get hurt or trip over. We started off by saying that what we're talking about is what can be directly experienced now. And in that sense, we can experience what is visible, what is audible, what has smell, taste, or touch, and certain other things like liking and disliking and so forth. But what is taken for a table is a composite of different experiences. So at the moment, it's what has been seen plus memory and observation and all these other things that happen very quickly. In that sense, what we're most interested in is what can be directly experienced at the present moment and has a characteristic that can be verified. So that's the sense in which we're talking about being real.
I think that in order to understand whatever, there should be more considering about the truth of it. For example, we talk about many words like space. What is the truth of it? We think about space, but what is the truth of it? Is there space? Or is only thinking about it? Or what is it? Is it real? So what is it when it's real? There can be more understanding of it by considering whatever is said. And when it's real, what is it? Is there space now? Yes, see? No, for primary, it's not hard, it's not soft, right? We can do it like this. No touching of hardness or softness at all. So it's out of the hardness, softness, but it's there. Sense is there. Can it experience anything? Space?
Ordinary human beings probably can't experience space except in their very limited surroundings, but human beings that are equipped with the proper devices and sensors can observe it, and they can report on it to us.
So what is it?
What is it? Space.
It means nothing there, right?
Well, I don't know where I would say that.
Otherwise, it must be something like sound, hardness or softness. But when it's space, it means there's no all these things there. Like space here.
It's not exactly like space here, no.
Space is space, no matter it's so very, very small or very large, yeah. As universal.
Yeah.
Do you mean it can be directly experienced by an individual, or it can only be measured by appropriate machines or devices?
I think that's what I mean, yeah.
So when you talk about space, you mean precisely what is not hot, like hot and cold or heat or whatever, like now? Because like there's also sometimes cold, or so you mean what it's not precisely all these things, right? And it is space. Mm-hmm.
So what is its nature? Is it real?
Simply.
Well, you know, there are lots of things that can't be experienced directly by humans because of the limitations of our senses. For example, low frequency sounds or high frequency sounds. There's a range within which our ears are capable of hearing things, but just because we can't hear them doesn't mean they don't exist. Other animals can hear them, and there are machines that can hear them. The same with light. We can only see a visible range of light, but there's a spectrum of light that's beyond the visible, which can be seen by, to use a metaphor, a machine, X-rays, for example, or other kinds of ultraviolet rays can be seen, but we can't experience them directly. So they nevertheless exist.
Well, they don't exist in the sense of being capable of being directly experienced at the present moment.
Not if that's your definition of experience.
Right, but we are talking about having a better understanding, right, of the way things are.
Yes.
What can be understood is what can be directly experienced at the present moment. So if there are sounds arising over there, but not heard by us, or of a frequency that cannot be directly experienced by us, that's not of any direct concern. We can only speculate about it, right? It can only be thought about.
Maybe, but if you go to the hospital for an X-ray on your broken bone, you can't see the X-rays, but it's of direct relevance to you.
By thinking, yes, but that doesn't help us to understand more about what can be directly understood. that can only be thought about.
I just would like to understand whatever is real. Is space real? If you don't call it the rupa.
It must be real.
It must be real.
But it's not easy to know it as we might think.
Right? Can we have more understanding of the nature of space? It's there, right? Here and now, different spaces. Because there are spaces in between each material too, and that is also space. See? Can the machine experience anything?
No, machines don't experience things, they just measure them.
So, whatever which cannot experience anything is real, right? That reality which cannot experience other is there. Like here, hardness cannot experience anything. So there are two different kinds of the absolute realities. If you don't talk about human being, birds or anything, just the reality itself, like seeing, is a reality because it now sees. It's real. But that is the reality which can experience that which is seen. So we can say that, or understand correctly, that realities cannot belong to anything, but they are different. One is that which can experience, and the other cannot experience at all, no matter this world or any world or universal. So there are so many, many different kinds of that which experiences. That's why we have to use the term for each one. Like seeing, we talk about now that which experiences this world object only. And hearing, we talk about that which is not seeing, because it hears another reality. So space is a reality which cannot experience, but it's a reality. So what we take for I, what is the reality? That which is taken for I at the moment of seeing, it is more moment of taking that which experiences as I see. But actually, no I. Seeing sees, hearing hears, thinking things. Not at anyone's will at all, just by conditions, completely. And can we say that this is life? Without that which can experience, there's no life at all.
So we also talked about how
actually there's just one world at a time. So at a moment of seeing, that's the world at this moment. At a moment of hearing, that's a world, a different kind of experiencing. At the moment of thinking, it's another world. So the world that we're used to thinking of, people, things, countries, is in our imagination. But actually the world is just a moment of seeing now, hearing now, thinking now. And just a few moments ago was a hearing of sound, and because of memory and accumulated remembrance, for me there was thinking about bird sound, but I don't know so much about birds, so I would have no idea what kind of bird it is. But because you're a bird lover or expert, I'm sure when you hear that sound, immediately there's thinking about or identifying this kind of bird or that kind of bird. But actually at the moment of hearing, just sound that's heard. But because of memory, in absolutely just split seconds, this thinking and identifying different kinds of birds because of what one's heard, because of different interests, different habits, different memories. But actually, just the world of sound that is experienced at that moment of hearing, and then thinking long, long, long story about particular kinds of birds, and imagine, because of having seen visible objects so many times, remembering different visible objects and imagining what kind of bird is making that sound, but actually just the world of hearing for a moment, and then many moments of thinking. So we get, by considering more about the basics, we get closer and closer to understand what life really is at this moment.
So, what are they now? Any moment. That which can experience and that which cannot experience, that's all. Without any experience at all, can there be world? No experiencing. Can there be any world appearing? Impossible. So it depends on the reality which can experience an object.
It would be a world, but it would be a dead world.
How can it be known as that when there's no experiencing at all, even no thinking, no seeing?
Well, the machine could see it.
Measure.
And measure it.
Where's I, who can measure?
The machine would have been created by a...
That's true, it would have to be created by a world.
As we were saying earlier, there are sounds arising now that aren't heard by anyone. There's visible object that's not seen by any being. It's another way of saying that the conditions for the arising of those things do not include the fact that they are the object of consciousness, but they may still arise because there are other conditions for them to arise. But if they can't be experienced, they can't be known directly. They can only be assumed. So again, we come back to what can be directly experienced as being what can be understood in the direct sense rather than thought about.
So what do we mean when we say he dies? No more experiencing of anything like before. And when one say a baby is born, what's that? What is born? That which experiences arises as a being, a baby. Without that, it's not being.
Without conception.
Mm-hmm. We take that reality for something all the time, as living being or that dead being. So shall we use just one word for that which is the faculty of experiencing an object, very short, citta. Citta. The faculty of experiencing is not that which like or dislike. Whenever it arises, it has just one function, just experience that which is experienced. For example, seeing cannot think. Seeing cannot like. It arises by conditions just to see and then falls away in split seconds. Never the same identity. Different ones all the time. From birth to death.
And we also mentioned earlier about the mirage, because it seems that the world is light all the time. It seems that there is light experienced at each moment, but actually if there is no seeing of visible object, there's no experience of light at that moment. There is no light appearing at all. So at moments of hearing, actually the world is dark. At moments of thinking, the world is dark. but because there is no understanding of the visible object, which falls away instantly, it seems that it's light all the time, but it's a mirage, it's a fantasy. So actually understanding more about these different realities, such as the cittas or the rupas, those realities that don't experience anything, we begin to learn to see that most of the time we're living in the world of ignorance. So usually there is no understanding anything about what is true and real. So by considering and understanding more about these different realities, it's just there is just a little opening, just a little bit of understanding in between all the other moments of ignorance that usually make up our life. So I think they're precious opportunities in life to just begin to consider more about how there are just these different realities, those which experience an object, the cittas and the mental factors, which we call cetasikas, and the rupas, those realities that don't experience anything, to really understand that there really is no person, no me, no table, no tree, just these different realities in life. And so much thinking about various ideas.
So Glenn, do you think that there's any value in studying
the brain in this regard?
I suppose so, yeah. Why not?
Can the element of seeing be understood by studying the brain? Can hearing be understood by studying the brain? Can thinking be understood by studying the brain?
Well, I would say certainly aspects of them can be understood.
So, Ken, when you're saying understood, do you mean eventually there being a direct experience?
No.
Yes. You mean
starting from
intellectual understanding. Right. I guess the brain, in terms of what can be understood, what can be directly experienced, not now, but what can be, the brain is not among the absolute realities. The brain is an idea. The brain is a concept. I guess I find it more useful to talk about understanding realities than attempting to understand the brain, because that sends you into a conceptual abyss. Whereas trying to understand, you know, hearing about and considering what one hears about realities where there are conditions can lead to more and more understanding, initially at a theoretical level. And then, I know that's, let's not get into the complications about that word now, but eventually where there are conditions to direct experience of the realities being considered. But without hearing about the Dhamma, about the realities, and wise consideration of them, there cannot be direct experience of them. Again, where there are conditions a long way off. But I guess brain is a concept and something to be thought about, but not a reality.
Without seeing, can there be the idea of brain? Without seeing, can there be the idea of brain?
Probably not.
No. And without hearing, can there be the idea of brain? So brain comes from seeing. that particular form and is told that this is brain, we can change the word brain, but we cannot change the characteristic of reality at all. So what is seen is only different shape, different color. And we hear about what is there. It's called brain, and we think about its function and so on. But the reality of brain is that it cannot experience anything at all. When it's touched, it's hard. And when it's seen, the picture or the whatever image is there. And when it's heard, it's all about that, which cannot experience at all. Because when we touch, it's hard, and hardness cannot experience anything. And when it is seen, visible object cannot experience anything. So brain is that reality which cannot experience. It cannot know anything. It cannot think. It cannot do anything at all. It can be taken to laboratory. Only that.
Can we distinguish knowing about seeing from knowing seeing directly? A study of the brain, or any part of the physical body for that matter, can help us know about seeing and hearing and these experiencings. But it's a different kind of knowing than the knowing that comes from experiencing directly. There are things that can be known by direct experience that can't be known by investigation or scientific methods. There are things that can be known by scientific investigation that can't be known by direct experiencing. So what we are saying is that the ignorance we have is the ignorance about the way things can be known by direct experience. It's not ignorance of scientific knowledge about these things. Not only is there ignorance, but we also actually hold views about these things. And the views are, if anything, more dangerous than ignorance, and may not be apparent to us, but we make a lot of assumptions about the world we live in, not based on scientific knowledge, because we probably have reasonable scientific knowledge, but we hold ideas that are probably not consistent with the way these experiencings are if they are directly known. So that's the importance of having a better direct understanding of these things.
Can you say that the science presumes that even the rupa or materiality can experience something, right? It assigns the role of experiencing to the brain, for example.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know enough about science to answer that. I know it assigns a role to the brain in experiencing. Of course, science cannot measure consciousness. Consciousness, the faculty of experiencing, is appearing now and can be directly understood in a way that it hasn't been before, whereas it can't be measured by science.
And what is science? Only thinking, considering in different ways about that which is not directly experienced. For example, is brain now arising? See? What is nature which arises to be brain? Without any reality, there is no brain at all. So what we take for brain is what? What we take for science is what? Or scientists or whatever. I think that when we consider what is it from the very beginning, it's easy to understand the truth, rather than there is only just thinking about as before.
For example, now.
what is experienced at a moment of touching now? Would you say?
Is it science? Touching.
Well, I feel a hard object. That's an observation. Science is based on observation.
But if we just forget about... Yeah. If we just forget about the word science for now, at a moment of touching, actually, hardness is experience. We think it's an object, but just hardness or just tangible object is experienced at that moment. And no matter whether it's touching here or touching here or touching here, we can say hardness or softness or tangible object is experienced. So that is what is real, that can be directly known, can be directly proved now, that it's hardness. And at this moment of touching, it is just the experiencing of that hardness. There is the touching. No one is touching, because we know that's an illusion. So it's just a moment of touching, and then thinking about, this is a hard object, maybe it's a microphone or a chair. But at the moment of touching, no matter here where we might call head or brain, or here which we might call table or leg, it's just tangible object, just hardness that is experienced at that moment. So this is what it means to get closer and closer to understanding that reality which is experienced at that moment.
And at moment of touching, where's the scientist? No, that is not the moment of seeing or touching, just one moment. Right. Mm-hmm. Only the idea. If one hasn't heard about that at all, no idea about that.
Right. Science is thinking about realities.
Just to make clear, science has its uses, and not to disparage them, but different from the understanding of direct experience.
So there are two kinds of understanding. Right understanding and wrong understanding, right? Opposite. And ignorance and understanding is also different too. Ignorance cannot understand whatever appears as it is, but understanding can understand directly the characteristic of that which appears as it is. As long as the understanding does not arise, there must be ignorance about whatever appears. So again, what are there now? What are there now?
So actually, we can say, if we can use three Pali words, the whole world comes down to citta, moments of experiencing like seeing and hearing, cetasika, mental factors like pleasant, unpleasant feeling, attachment, ignorance, and rupa, those realities that don't experience anything like hardness or visible objects. So life, the world, everything we find important just comes down to citta, cetasika and rupa. And anything other than the realities, these realities, is an idea. So hardness is a rupa, space is a rupa, but brain is an idea.
If there were not these different experiences.
Do you have any comments, Tainita?
Or any questions?
Is it true that life just
consists of cheetah seekers and rupas, just those realities that experience and those realities that are experienced? No in reality, no family, no husband, no politics, no television, no newspaper, no sports. Is it true?
Yes, as from what I've learned, it's true. There's only citta, cittasika, and rupa. But it takes time to really understand about that.
Can one live without understanding or taking realities for something?
Yes.
You don't know rice, table, food? See, that's why it's absurd to think that way. Because from seeing, there can be the understanding or taking it for something, like a dish, a table. But the absolute reality is, after seeing, by remembering different image and shape and form, it conditioned the idea of something. Even Buddha knew who's who. After that, there must be that citta which understand what is there. But at the same time, there's the right understanding of what is real and what is only the image. Can you say that there is only seeing without image of that which is seen?
Can you say it again?
Can there be only seeing and that which is seen without the image or sign of that which is seen as something?
No.
So it's the nature. There's not only seeing, there must be thinking of that which arises or falls away so rapidly. And by the, having that reality which arises and falls away in split seconds, appears as nimitta, sign, with shape and form of something, all the time. And right understanding can understand the distinction between seeing and thinking and memory and whatever is there.
Just like a few moments ago when we haven't turned on the light and everything seems dark, and now when I see the light on, I see a bit like brighter. So it's so complicated to understand about between the two differences, when it's darker and when it's brighter.
What is seen is seen, but thinking about light is different, less or more. See? But actually, what is seen must be seen.
No matter how conventionally,
whether we call it light light or dark light or whatever, but actually it's still just visible object that's seen. Just like no matter whether it's what we conventionally call quiet sounds or noisy chirpy sounds of birds, actually just sound that is heard. But because each sound, each visible object is different, and each one is marked by memory. So there are different signs of different sounds, different visible objects, thinking about different ideas about different sounds, different visible objects. But actually at a moment of seeing, then or now, with or without the lights, just visible object that's seen at that moment.
What can be taken for the light? From which realities?
So just
different visible objects seen and thinking in between, thinking about bright lights. If there was no visible object, there'd be no thinking about lights. Because of memory, remembering this is bright light, so thinking about bright lights. And if you hadn't mentioned it, maybe we wouldn't think about bright lights, but because you mention it, now everyone's thinking about bright lights. So because of what has been heard, the sound heard, and the visible object seen, and thinking in between with lots of memory, So that's why there's an idea of bright light seen, just like there's an idea of people seen.
Just another idea about what is
seen.
So say that because visible object doesn't arise alone, but it arises together with the four primary rupas that give different, that each visible object is not the same.
Not the same in what way?
So now it's going a little bit beyond basics. So visible object that's seen is a rupa, a reality. But that reality, when it arises, is conditioned by other rupas. So that the visible object seen at each moment is different. As you mentioned before, each moment of seeing arises and falls away. Each visible object also arises and falls away. But the visible object seen now is different from the visible object seen a moment ago, because it's conditioned by other rupas. It arises with hardness, for example, or temperature that condition it to be different. And this is the reason why when memory marks it, it marks it according to how it is at this moment. And this is why there comes to be thinking about different sights, different lights or people. If the visible objects was always the same, just like if the sound was always the same, there wouldn't be an idea of chirpy birds or this kind of bird or that kind of bird. But actually each visible object is seen. Seen is different, each sound heard is different, conditioned by other rupas that arise together with it that are not experienced at that moment.
But the characteristic of the visible object or of the sound that is heard at the precise moment of being experienced by the seeing or hearing consciousness is the same, regardless of whether, when it's thought about, it's perceived to be a bright light or a dark light, a loud sound or a soft one. So at the actual moment of contact between the object of the sensed or experience and the consciousness that experiences it, that characteristic of both of the experiencing and the object that's experienced doesn't change from moment to moment. It can be known all moments of experiencing visible object have a characteristic in common.
In the same way as you would say the seeing of a bird is the same as seeing of a human being.
Just seeing. When there is understanding of seeing,
there's no thought about it being seeing, this kind of seeing or that kind of seeing. And when it's visible object, it's understood as visible object. There's no idea or thought of bright or not bright. It's just that which appears, just that which is visible at that moment.
And when we speak about the basics and what is really true and what is not true in the ultimate sense, people will keep on asking, but we need to lead our daily lives and we need to understand too what is true in conventional sense. So how would you explain that to people who begin to learn?
I think it's like
Anne said, when there is understanding of what is ultimately true, what is the different realities that we're talking about, then there is no confusion or misunderstanding about what are conventional truths. That we refer to this as a table, and this is Suchin, and this is Jonathan, no confusion or misunderstanding. Even when we talk about Jonathan or his leg, there's no taking it for being reality. But without an understanding of realities, ultimate realities, then there's no understanding of what is conventionally real, because it will be taken for being absolutely real. So it comes back to having to hear and consider what is absolutely real. And life goes on just as usual. It's not a matter of changing the way one dresses or slowing down one's actions, or living more simply, or changing one's occupation, or increasing one's blood pressure, or anything like that. Life goes on just as it always has, but with more understanding of absolute realities, and then no taking what is conventionally real for being absolutely real, which is how we're used to thinking. We're used to thinking the table is real, but now we know only hardness is touched, but we still talk about putting our cup of tea on the table. No misunderstanding.
Just any idea of
changing our behavior or doing things in a more deliberate way, or never forgetting to pick up the pen, or living in a different style of accommodation, or wearing different clothes. It's misunderstanding about realities in daily life very normally and naturally.
And I don't know if you have heard,
Glenn, about the Four Noble Truths taught by the Buddha. So in the very first sermon he ever gave, he taught about the Four Noble Truths. So the first truth is about how every moment in life, every one of the realities we've been talking about, because it arises by conditions and falls away instantly, because it is so impermanent, it is inherently unsatisfactory. So this is the truth of dukkha. You might have heard the word dukkha. Usually it's translated as suffering, or that unsatisfactory might be better. And it refers to how each of these realities is conditioned, it arises, it falls away, totally unsatisfactory and not worth clinging to in any way at all. And the second truth is about the truth of attachment, how because there is attachment to these different realities that are so impermanent and unsatisfactory, this is actually the cause of all difficulties, all problems in life, and actually the continuation of life from lifetime to lifetime. So the cause of the cycle of life and the cause of all problems in life is attachment to that which is impermanent. And the third noble truth is about the end of attachment. I'm sure you've heard the word nibbana. Nibbana is actually the total eradication and ending of attachment. And the fourth noble truth is, you may have heard about, is called the Eightfold Path. And this is the middle way, and it's about the development of right understanding of these different realities, accompanied by other mental factors. So the way out of this endless cycle of clinging to impermanent realities is through the development of understanding. And with the development of understanding and the other factors that accompany it, there is also the development of detachment as opposed to attachment to what appears now. When it seems like it's my husband, my friend, so much attachment, but by beginning to understand that actually just hardness experienced, visible objects seen, at those very rare moments of wise reflection and understanding, there is detachment for a moment, just a little bit less clinging or attachment being accumulated in life. So it's quite interesting to hear about these truths taught by the Buddha for the first time. And it all comes back to the understanding we've been discussing about seeing now, what is seen now, visible object now, in order to develop more understanding with detachment as opposed to attachment, which is how life usually goes on.
they are false statements about the way things are in reality that encapsulate everything that needs to be known one way or another. But during this session, what we've been talking about is the last one that Sarah mentioned, is the development of understanding as being the way leading to the end of the unsatisfactoriness in the first statement. Because if things are seen as they really are, the unsatisfactoriness becomes more apparent, and the reason for being attached to them falls away naturally. For example, now, as well as being attached to what is seen and heard and possessions, we also want to live and keep living, and we would like it to go on for as long as possible. And when this life ends, we'd like it to continue in another existence, preferably a pleasant one. So that's another kind of attachment that we haven't actually discussed so far. And that is based on our perception of the way things are. But if we had a better understanding of the unsatisfactoriness of things, then there wouldn't be the same urge to continue in existence, life after life. It is the present craving for that continued existence that is the condition for it to continue.
Does it make
sense to you that these different realities we've been talking about that make up life are unsatisfactory because they're impermanent and therefore not worth clinging to at all?
Not yet. For everyone. How can we become have less and less attachment to whatever appears when there's not enough understanding?
But it has to be less and less if there's understanding.
How much less?
Very little.
Mm-hmm. Unnoticeable.